Today is Transitions Tuesday on Mind Talk. I am your host, Dr. Pamela Brewer. Mind Talk is the show that provides you with relationship health and mental health information every day. And on Transitions Tuesday, we focus on all things related to the many different kinds of transitions we all have occasion to experience in our lives.
And today's guest, Edward G. Brown, is the author of The Time Bandit. And I got to tell you, when I saw the title, I said, oh, that's for Mind Talk, because we all know that we're all operating on 18 cylinders much of the time, too much of the time, and there just doesn't seem to be enough of it. So I am delighted to introduce to you Edward G. Brown, who is the president, co-chairman, and co-founder, we got to find out how he finds time, of Cohen Brown Management Group, which is a leading sales and service culture change specialist for the financial services industry. Culture change specialist for financial services. That almost sounds like they don't fit together. Edward G. Brown, welcome to Mind Talk.
Pamela, thank you for inviting me. I want to open by telling you something Frank Sinatra said to his kids, which was, do as I say, not as I do. So I, in response to your question, I never have found the time to do all the things I wanted to. I don't think I ever will, but I'll never stop trying.
Well, that, you know, there's always hope.
There's always hope.
And I think every parent has said, do as I say and not as I do. I think every, you know, business leader has said the same things in varying ways to their colleagues and their staff. So if what is it that makes time such a hard thing to negotiate?
Let's talk first about the importance of Pamela.
Okay.
Would you agree that it's the most important commodity that we have?
Absolutely.
We can't afford to squander it, but we do.
We squander it all the time.
The fact is, I am a consultant of behavior change, and my partner, who was a leading psychiatrist when we became partners in 1979, was given the opportunity to solve problems at a big securities firm named Merrill Lynch, which was going through a lot of time management pain.
And I think we all know about Merrill Lynch.
Yeah, they're a wonderful retail securities firm. At that time, they were decentralizing because they had a space alleviation issue. And because of that space alleviation issue, data processing people were being bumped into by colleagues, and they were making mistakes.
Okay.
And I noticed that the same people who worked at night during night processing work were never making mistakes, and that it was the interruptions, it was the distractions that was causing the mistakes at Merrill Lynch. And we began to solve the problem by providing privacy for the people who otherwise would be exposed to the general public. And with that research, I learned as well that the recovery of perhaps one of the worst financial recessions we've had in 2008 was taking place as a result of downsizing and hiring freezes, because in corporate America, everyone, I'd say that human resources are the greatest expense we have.
Mm. That's interesting. Okay.
And if we don't maximize the use of that human resource, give it everything it needs to flourish and to do its job, we're simply shooting ourselves in the leg if we're bosses.
That's true.
But I didn't want to just speak of corporate America, Pamela. I want to speak about those of us who don't have a corporation or aren't key managers in corporations, and say the very people who go to work every day and are deprived of the privacy they need and suffer from five time loss factors, which include the interruption that takes place every day in every way, and the desire to start off, go back and start again where they left off, and the loss of momentums that they build because they want to do what they're doing accurately, force them to start from the beginning again, and they have to do over where they left off. So they may as well start from the very beginning. And thus, this causes a certain amount of distress, which causes fatigue, and makes it more difficult for them to meet the deadlines that they must meet.
And it sounds like an extraordinary waste of time and an extraordinary consumption of time.
And a huge cause of distress.
Absolutely. And we know that when workers are, well, people, period, when they are experiencing stress, it makes it more difficult to focus, to concentrate, to be productive, to think. I mean, all of those things are negatively impacted upon by stress.
Exactly. And Pamela, it means a lowering of job satisfaction.
Yes.
Which in turn lowers self-esteem, self-confidence.
Right.
And everything else associated with the pathos and the habit that Dr. Lombardo spoke of yesterday when she discussed her book, Better Than Perfect, which I thought it was, Pamela, as I said to you privately, I thought it was wonderful.
Thank you.
So I've made myself a videotape called Structured Time and Workflow Management. What it did, it's invited both the time bandits and the victims of time bandits to get together in a class. And what they would do, first of all, is calculate.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's back up a little bit.
Sure.
Who are you identifying as these time bandits?
Question. A time bandit could be your colleague. It can be your boss. It can be your best friend, a family member. Just about everybody.
So it's people that you interact with and that you either want to interact with or need to interact with.
Exactly.
Well, if they're stealing your time, it seems to me, particularly if it's a boss, but certainly with colleagues and family members, if they're the ones who are the stealers of your time, it would be really hard to set limits with them and to say no. How do you do that?
Well, the first thing you must never do is say no.
Okay.
To a time bandit. It can be very destructive to a relationship, and it's not necessary. It's the finesse you use.
Okay.
And what you say and how you say what you say that you must learn to develop, and that's what's in the book. Pamela, that's what the whole book is about.
Okay. It's what you say and how you say it, and no gets kicked out of your vocabulary.
Exactly.
At least in this arena. Well, talk about, you said that you got together a group of people and you made a video. Talk about that video. What did you discover?
Well, the first thing we did is calculate the amount of time interruptions cause. These participants were international bankers because most of my work is in financial services.
Okay.
And they came from everywhere, from Australia, England, South Africa, and, of course, the United States and Canada. They learned, and I'd love the audience to consider doing what they did, was that by calculating the amount of time in a day that was wasted because the interruptions wasted a part of their day, 40 to 60% or 3 to 5 hours a day were wasted as a result of interruptions.
That is an extraordinary figure.
But it's true. In fact, I'd like to at this moment, if you don't mind, invite everyone to log in when you can.
Okay.
To STWM. That stands for Structured Time and Workflow Management, STWM.com.
Okay.
There's a quiz. The quiz asks exactly the same question that we asked at the workshop. How much time of yours is lost as a result of interruptions? And if you answer the questions and send me the information I need, I'll send you a free book, either an e-book or a hardcover book.
Okay.
Or an audio book or an e-book, whichever you prefer.
Okay.
Because I'm really anxious to learn more about the facts concerning how much time is lost by everyone, not just people in my industry.
All right, let's just repeat that website again. It's S-T...
S as in Sam, T as in Tom, W as in women, M as in Mary.
Okay, .com. All right. And when you take that quiz, you will be able to identify how much time you actually waste in a day, in a week?
In a month.
In a month, okay.
And you will know how invidious and how insidious interruptions can be to your life.
Well, you know, when you put it in terms of 40%, when you say 5 to 6 hours, I mean, that just sounds like such a huge amount of time wasted that it almost sounds overwhelming. So once folks get this information that, you know, maybe half of their workday is wasted, now what do we do?
Well, I ask that question. They multitask.
Okay.
And they work longer hours.
Ah. So part of understanding what some of your time wasters are and ways to negotiate them differently, you can also improve the quality of not only your work life, but your home life as well.
I'm glad you brought that up, Pamela, because this is as much a book about home life as it is about work life.
Absolutely.
You bring home a bad attitude because you're frustrated because of the interruptions that took place during the day. You missed your deadline. No time to work with Johnny on his homework. And the dinner doesn't go well.
Right.
And no time to hunt or fish. Too busy trying to make up for lost time.
And so your what may feel like your personal experience of stress and time lost on the job actually becomes time lost for all the people around you with whom you interact on a regular basis.
Exactly.
So this business of taking a look at how you spend your time and is it spent in a way that is useful for you is really absolutely critical to the quality of your life in general.
There's a motto that I'd like everyone to consider. It's this. If you don't control your time, you don't control your life.
Mm.
Because in our life, that's really all we have.
That's true. If you don't control your time, you don't control your life.
Exactly.
And if you don't control your life, there's kind of some stuff you need to be concerned about. You talk about quiet time and time locking. Quiet time, you know, a lot of times, certainly for adults, what they think about is quiet time is when you send Johnny in the corner to calm down for a few minutes before allowing him or her to go back and do whatever they were doing. We're going to take a break right now. Maybe folks can take a little quiet time. But when we come back, I'd like to start with that. When you say quiet time, what exactly does that mean? Folks, this is Dr. Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk and a fascinating conversation with Edward Brown, author of The Time Bandit. And we're back. This is Pamela Brewer. You are listening to Mind Talk, and we're learning about ways, quite frankly, to de-stress our lives by turning our time usage into something that is more fruitful for us as individuals. Would you agree with that?
Exactly, Doc.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So, quiet time, as I said just before the break, you know, that's when you send Johnny off to the corner to calm down. But I don't think that's what you mean, or is it?
No. I'm afraid that alone time has received too much bad press. Mm. Alone time, to me, is time to think. And there are four categories of questions that your audience might think about with respect to decisions they make in their lives.
Okay.
That are very important. The first is, are there decisions, dreams, and concepts that you have suppressed, sublimated because of your fear of the consequences? Does that always happen? Does it often happen? Does it really happen? Never happen. That's one of the questions I ask in the quiz. You see, the full name of the book is Time Bandit Solutions, Recovering Time You Never Knew You Had.
Right.
And when you get into the book, again, I'd love for you to have it at my expense, if you just send me the information about your time management problems, you then may ask yourself this question. Have you made changes in your life forced by events over which you had no control? Mm. Sometimes, often, really. And what you'll notice is that we never have time to really make thoughtful decisions.
Yeah.
If, as you undoubtedly read the book, you know, and in my early years, when I was in my 30s, my best years, I'm 70 plus now, I had the third largest business management firm in the United States.
Wow.
I represented entertainers of all kinds, movie stars, television stars, and athletes. And I did very well.
But I would think you'd never had
really
time.
Did well, because I never had the time to really absorb my success. There was another problem. I got to thinking, perhaps I wasn't just lucky, because I was so successful, that I wondered if it was me or if it was just that I was good at things because I was just good at things.
Okay.
Or if I had some special talent. So I really wasn't enjoying myself. So I sought time alone, and where I could think and analyze decisions I was making on behalf of clients and decisions I was making on behalf of myself.
And for a lot of people, you know, the idea of alone time, quiet time, is anxiety-provoking all by itself. You talk about it, though, as a time of renewal and learning and just taking a breath.
Who is it, doctor, who said an unexamined life is worth living?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We need to be introspective. And to be introspective, we need alone time. Time with ourselves. Do we want to really change jobs? Are we really going to divorce after all these years? And do I really want to move? Those decisions are major life-altering decisions.
Right.
You don't want to make shoot-from-the-hip decisions about those sorts of things. You want quiet time to ponder and to reflect.
So
analyze the upside.
It sounds like quiet time then is actually something that you owe yourself, that you deserve to offer yourself.
Exactly. And to others who are depending on you.
Okay. All right. What is time locking? What does that mean?
Well, it was mastering quiet time that led me to the realization as a teacher that I would be entitled to blocks of uninterrupted time, I called time locks, if I could get my interrupters, my time bandits, to give me the right to time lock. And I mean, I said the right, but I really mean the privilege, because they weren't doing it.
Gotcha.
And I would have to ask for it proactively. And I'd have to find the way to ask for it. I'd have to find the right words and say those words in the right way.
So how do you say to your boss or your spouse, I want an hour to myself? Don't bother me.
Well, of course, that's a great question. I covered this thoroughly in the book. There's not just the boss. There's the biggest interrupter of all, if you're at work, if you're in business, you'll find is your colleague.
Right.
Your colleague is responsible for 80% of the interruptions you suffer from. And, of course, you work with them all day. And let's discuss the fact that we're entitled to socially network.
Okay.
We go to work to socialize. It's okay. It's also okay to do social networking, period. And life is more than just work. But it's a question of the 80-20 rule. 80% of what we accomplish in our lives, it happens because of the 20% of the things we do. It's called the 80-20 rule. It's true in business and it's true in life.
80%. Say that again for us.
80%. Mm-hmm. Of what we accomplish in life happens because of the decisions we make that represent 20%, only 20% of the things we actually do.
Interesting.
It's called the Pareto scales. Pareto lived in Italy in a village, and he noticed in his village, 80% of the people had most of the assets and wealth. And then he noticed that in other villages it was the same thing. Now it's become a major rule in business that we focus on the critical few things that generate the most amount of revenues and achieve the greatest amount of results. And that it's those 20% of the behaviors and actions that we take that we have to ponder the most.
Interesting. So it puts even how you, as an individual, whether you're in business for yourself or working with someone or going to school, it certainly puts into different context how you think about what your actual behaviors need to be to get you to where you wish to be.
Which manifests into the behaviors mm-hmm. That you utilize to do those things.
So I got my boss, let's say, who walks into my office. Let's say I'm in a high-pressure job. Things are always popping. There are always deadlines. And I got a boss. I have colleagues who are always popping in and out of my office. We're always on deadline. We're just always, always, always. How do I say to any of them, I need an hour to myself, or I need 10 minutes to myself?
Well, the boss, believe it or not, everyone, is the easiest of all to work with. Because the boss will learn when you tell them that the boss is paying for your time.
Okay.
In other words, the boss isn't paying for you to sit around and have fun and discuss sports
right.
or meet with colleagues. If he's interrupting you unnecessarily, he's shooting himself in the leg. And if he's allowing colleagues to interrupt each other because of the lousy architecture we have nowadays where there's no privacy, it's just cubicles.
Yeah.
And listen to this one. How many times have you heard in your life, hey, you got a minute, Doc?
Right.
Right in the middle of something you were doing.
Right.
You were building this wonderful momentum. You're about to finish the task. And Ed Brown walks into your office and says, Pamela, you got a minute?
And a minute rapidly becomes so much more. Absolutely. So what do we do?
So what we do is this. We think of ourselves as sales professionals.
Okay.
Since I was teaching selling and negotiating techniques, I thought of the fear aspect, terrified were these people to walk into their boss's office or to speak to the colleague about the truth
okay.
of interruptions. So I analyzed objections. When salesmen sell, they know there are three parts of a sale: creating an interest, overcoming objections, and closing.
Okay.
They know if they can overcome the objection of the prospect, uh-huh. they automatically close. So objections are the most important aspect of overcoming fear of rejection. And fear of rejection is what they're frightened of the most. Pamela, if I were your boss and you walked in and you said to me, Ed, you know, I gotta tell you something. You're hurting my productivity. And I could be better at my job if you would stop walking in on me every 5 minutes. You might get fired.
Or I might have a boss who would say, gee, thank you, okay.
That's the point, Pamela. That's excellent observation, because that's what happens. The boss says, Pamela is very productive, and I'm interfering with her productivity, and she's pointing out to me that by doing that, I'm hurting myself. And she's also brought to my attention that colleagues of hers are doing the same thing. And I need to bring the kind of control over interruptions into my enterprise and make certain that everyone discusses with each other that there are moments when interruptions are acceptable, but not all the time.
And so, you know, I think in a smaller office that might be, well, I guess as I think about even large companies, each department is in essence a small office. I was going to say, how do you infuse that throughout, you know, a large entity? But if you look at it as a large entity, I think you kind of shoot yourself in the foot.
All right, here's my favorite script. I deserve a drum roll for this, Pamela.
Okay.
My favorite script is speaking about yourself, asking others if they have difficulty meeting their deadlines, and if they have difficulty with interruptions, and that somehow your day is never over. And you, at the end of the day, you wonder, where did all the time go?
Yeah.
And by doing that, you engage them in that discussion, and suddenly you find a need for a solution.
Gotcha.
And now you have to ask me, and what's the solution?
Oh, Mr. Brown, what's the solution?
Well, thank you for asking. It's called the mutual time lock agreement.
Ah.
What you do is agree that during certain moments of the day, you will meet. During other moments of the day, you will not interrupt one another. Now, in the class I ran, it was with bosses only.
Okay.
And those who were the victims of the bosses. And so it was actually called the mutual charter agreement, where it was understood that these time lock agreements would become an enterprise-wide technique for increasing productivity.
Interesting.
And they kept measuring their productivity, and it was amazing that 40 to 60% that I told you was the cost of interruptions.
Hmm.
Most of the companies who integrated these time lock agreements increased their productivity by approximately 40 to 60%.
And, you know, I have to guess that at the end of the day, in addition to being more productive during the day, they felt more peaceful on their way home.
For me, that was the greatest benefit.
Mm.
Not the increase in productivity. It was the fact that I knew I was helpful to those employees who could now have a decent dinner and have a decent weekend and not feel the hurt and the low self-esteem that manifested into arguments at home.
Right. Ed Brown, author of The Time Bandit, we are going to take a break. The Time Bandit Solution. We are going to take a break, and we will return in just a moment. My name is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk. Welcome back, folks. This is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk and a continuing conversation with Edward G. Brown, who for 35 years has been known as the Communication Arts and Skills Scripting Clinic Czar. We hear a lot about czars nowadays, but I got to tell you, I think this one is actually helpful.
That's true.
Talk to me about Tommy Wants to Please. Introduce us to him. Who is he? What does he look like? What does he do? And isn't he lovely? He wants to please.
Well, Tommy wants to please because he's codependent. And since I suffer from a little of that myself, I can describe him very accurately.
Okay.
He's in his 30s. He is an area manager for a bank, which means he has branches reporting to him.
Okay.
And he reports to a regional director.
Okay.
And he has accounts of his own. So, from early in the morning till the end of the day, he's always dealing with administrative operations and compliance tasks. And he's meeting with his people to discuss their task and how well they're doing.
Okay.
His phone never stops ringing, ringing off the wall. He starts to do some administrative tasks, and he's interrupted. And as soon as the reason for the interruption is resolved, he goes back to what he was starting to do, and only to be interrupted again and again. And then, of course, in the middle of the day, his boss yells at him, "Tommy, don't forget that report. Got to have it in here before 5 o'clock." But it's already 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
He hasn't even started the report.
Oh, boy.
By the end of the day, poor Tommy ends up in what I call the AI hospital. That means aggravation, agitation, irritation, and irritability. I think those of us who were born and raised in New York have that in our DNA. But poor Tommy simply cannot get control of his time. And he is, like so many wonderful middle managers, trying to please everyone.
Mm.
And pleasing no one, especially his wife, who says, "Be home early for dinner."
Right. So what does he do?
Tommy reads the Time Bandit Solution for recovering time you never knew you had, and learns that there is a way to control his time, to batch process the various tasks that he has, and letting people know that he has deadlines, self-imposed deadlines. So that by the end of the day, he's done his administrative ops and compliance task. He's
mm-hmm.
worked on his boss's to-do list. And he lets them know by educating them in the nicest possible way. "I'd love to talk to you further, Pablo," he says. "But I'm right in the middle of handling a deadline I don't want to miss. Can I call you tomorrow? Let's set a time."
Okay.
In fact, that's what everyone needs to do. They must need to think about setting appointments in
okay.
with their clients. In the book, it explains that my investment advisor told me that through his secretary, he would love to meet with me after office hours unless it was an emergency. Then, of course, he would break his research task and meet with me at lunch.
Okay.
Again, it's a question of finesse, Pamela. And,
right.
And we use finesse and understand it's okay to make appointments with each other. It's not only socially acceptable, it's good business. Then that's what Tommy did to resolve his life.
And, you know, what I'm hearing of that is that in addition to setting limits for himself and, you know, for his client who tends to show up whenever he shows up, he's actually providing him, he's helping him to feel special. You know, "I'm willing to meet with you after work. Let's set a time. But if it's an emergency, of course I will interrupt and we can meet at lunch." So still setting sort of boxes of time within boxes of time at the same, so sort of chunking down the other person's expectations while making him feel special at the same time.
That's perfect, Pamela. It's exactly right.
Okay. That's doable.
That's very doable.
And I think part of the challenge for many of us is to recognize that we can do that, we have a right to do that, and that it actually improves the lives of so many, including us. Us, certainly, but the people around us as well. Talk to me about mental leakage. What is that?
It's what we suffer from if we're students. And we're trying with everything we can to absorb during the day what our teacher is telling us to remember. And or it's what we do if we're students when we're seeking to remember all that we know is going to be on the test, but for some reason we worry about yesterday or tomorrow, about something that's going to happen tomorrow or something that happened yesterday, or we're distracted by the internet, by all the wonderful toys and the opportunities we have to meet with friends on the internet.
Right.
And that's mental leakage.
Well, you speak about the internet. You're right. I mean, we have 24/7 access to the world outside of us. And so I can imagine that for some folks, even as they're able to get through your book, get through the techniques, they've got their quiet time and up pops the internet or an email or a text message, and their quiet time is spent perhaps not so quietly.
Exactly.
How do you guard against that? It is a very seductive thing.
I suppose more than any other reason, I developed quiet time, and which led to time locking. What I did is I made appointments with myself. I time locked with myself. I promised myself that I would not allow mental leakage. I would not think about anything that would upset or interfere with the next hour of my time. And during that moment, the hour or even less, that I committed to quiet time, I did not think of anything. Every time I began to think about something, usually it was negative, Pamela, I would offset a negative affirmation or concern with a positive affirmation. I eventually call that psychological martial arts because it isn't easy to do.
When you talk about time, as we are today, one of the themes that I hear repeatedly is that it is something that each of us as individuals deserves. And it is something that absolutely enhances the quality of our lives. So many times I think many people, especially those type A folks who are running around all the time doing everything, feel guilty about quiet time. And you're saying, celebrate it, it's yours, go get it, own it.
Type A's. The Maya Friedman study of type A, type B behavior that I know you're very familiar with. And for some of those of you who are not, Dr. Maya Friedman, a psychologist, analyzed that there are some individuals who worry more than others about not getting enough done in the periods of time they've given themselves. And they called those he called those individuals type A's. Mm-hmm. And those who were more comfortable about meeting deadlines and getting what was needed done, type B's. That's what you're referring to, Pamela.
Yes.
I also developed one more type, my wife's type. And what made me think yesterday about my wife, she's type C because she's also a perfectionist.
Okay.
Type A plus a perfectionist.
Uh-oh. Amazing.
But it's okay. She's got herself so organized that she's actually happy with her life, and she's able to do it all.
And she's okay with it.
She's okay with it. You know, what's most important is introspection.
Right.
That we're able to analyze ourselves and accept ourselves for who we are and deal with the issues and come up with solutions that make us happier people. I mean, isn't that the dream?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for this person who this, let's go back to this type A person who just almost loses, that person right now is sort of spinning around saying, but I can't, I don't have time to find time. And it's not okay to find, what do you say to that person?
I say to that person, God bless you. but I promise you, if you slow down and think through everything you want to get done, and stay organized, and use quiet time techniques, and use time locking techniques, you, just like your type B brethren, will get everything you want done. You need not be so neurotic, frenetic, and you'll be fine.
So it's okay.
It's okay.
It's not a bad thing to find time for yourself.
Some of our most successful politicians, God knows if there are any left, are type A's.
Boy, is that another conversation.
Do everything they possibly can. Look, they're Tommy.
Yeah.
And Tommy did a wonderful job for his boss, but he did a lousy job for himself until he got control over his time. Then he was promoted.
He was promoted after he got control of his time.
Yes, because his boss appreciated how productive he was.
Okay.
And his wife began to love him more because he got home on time for dinner.
So she was able to spend more time with him.
She was able to spend more time with him, exactly.
All right. The concept of focal locking, can you explain what that is? Is that similar to time locking, or is that something different?
No, it's very similar in this respect. We are our own worst time bandits. Mm. This problem you spoke of, mental leakage, makes us our own worst time bandits. We interrupt ourselves partially because of all the choices given to us by the internet. We're in LinkedIn, we're in GChat, we're YouTube friends. We have all kinds of reasons to be distracted. And thus, mental leakage is the problem. Focal locking is the solution.
And so how do you do that?
I actually use something I call psychological martial arts. I meditate.
Okay.
I know to a lot of people, meditation is silly. It's an East Indian cult thing, but it's really very, very good.
And very powerful. Yeah, it's very powerful.
Very powerful.
All right, so meditation, and the way to even start with the meditation, I talk to folks a lot of time about practicing their breathing as a way to get into a space where they can actually meditate peacefully and fully.
I love talking to you, Pamela. You know so much. It's called pranayama breathing. It's 2,000 years old. Shall I describe how it works?
Absolutely.
Okay. First of all, I do two things. I look in the mirror, and I tell myself every morning, along with my other hygiene, I use mental hygiene and say, I'm going to have a great day.
That's important.
Secondly, when I begin to get these negative vibrations that create adverse mental leakage, I sit down for 10 minutes, and I meditate. And meditation really means get control. And to do that, create a mantra.
Mm-hmm.
The yogis called the mantra anything that you want to make it, the cosmos, seascapes, landscapes. But begin by getting control. To get control, I used pranayama breathing, which is what Pamela was referring to.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to hold your right nostril by your forefinger and breathe, and count to eight, and inhale through your left nostril, and you'd begin to think of a color like gold, and the golden air that came through your left nostril would reach the center cortex of your brain. You couldn't possibly think about anything other than that breath. That's the point. The point of the meditation and using pranayama breathing is to stay focused. and just keep watching that gold air come in through your left nostril and reach the sense of the cortex of your brain and let it cool or warm your brain. And then hold the other side of your nostril and exhale slowly to the count of eight. And while you're doing that, give yourself a positive affirmation. Anything that you're worried about that might stand in your way,
yes,
that you don't think you can do, say, yes, I can. Visualize yourself being successful. I call that counterpunching. Counterpunching a negative thought or feeling with a positive thought or feeling.
And it is so powerful.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, and it's so incredibly powerful. A lot of times we don't realize how much our self-talk really impacts how we think and treat ourselves. It's absolutely a wonderful exercise. We're going to take a break. Folks can do a little breathing right now, and we will be right back to continue the conversation with Edward G. Brown, the author of The Time Bandit Solution. Hello, folks. This is Pamela Brewer. We are back and continuing the conversation with Edward G. Brown, author of The Time Bandit Solution, What to Do When You're Stretched Too Thin. Edward, as you think about the conversation that we've had today, we've given people bits and pieces of ways to think about time and activities in which to engage to sort of hone their own time management skills. The largest interrupter of our time management, I think I'd like to go back to that because you've said it earlier on. You said that we are our largest time bandits. Can we just revisit that for a moment and talk more about that?
Certainly. Mental leakage.
Mental
God
leakage.
Bless us, yeah, and our ability to overcome mental leakage. It's so important. We have it all the time. And what we do, we humans, is we worry.
We worry.
We worry about what we did yesterday.
Right.
We worry about what's going to happen tomorrow. And we worry whether or not, if we're happy, we're making somebody else unhappy.
Right.
And
it goes on and on.
How many books has everyone read in the last year? I have some statistics that 50 million Americans don't read books at all.
How many?
This survey started in 1978. It started occurring, I said up to myself, around the time of the internet, but perhaps everybody was perhaps reading e-books. No, it's not true. It's just that we're doing so little for ourselves.
Yeah.
And if we're happy, it's because we've gotten control of our time, and we've gotten control of mental leakage, and we haven't squandered our time. We haven't lost the idea or feeling that our most important commodity in life is time.
It really is time, yeah. And, I, you know, along those lines, when we recognize that we are, that we matter to ourselves, which is a struggle for a lot of folks, the idea of embracing time management is a natural. I mean, of course we should do that, and of course we should teach that.
That's it, Pamela. I think you're a wonderful lady. You know my book better than I.
For the person who's listening, let's say, who's working in a small group, family, office, whatever, and they're really starting to think about how to embrace time management. But they're with a group of people who think that time should be used in meetings or phone calls, and that if you're not engaging in a meeting, a conversation, a phone call, then you're not working, and being quiet is just not useful. How does that person begin to overcome the objections?
They begin by asking themselves what they think they're entitled to. I think they'll find that if they set the bar high enough, that the most fun in life is the fun they have with their family and the pleasure they get from reading. And if they can, I'd ask them to join a book club. Because
a book club
then would be devoting their time to making time for reading. And anything else that requires quiet introspection, study, and perhaps learning, and analyze that they're not alone. That every time bandit has a time bandit, and to discuss time banditry with colleagues and friends, it's a great topic. And they'll debate, they'll negotiate, but eventually they'll develop a time bandit solution for themselves.
You know, as I'm listening to you talk about that, and just the idea of joining a book club, you know, it's such a relatively simple solution, but it's not one that we think about ordinarily, because again, we don't think about our ability to make choices about our own time. For the folks who work in an environment where everything has to be a meeting, and it has to be a meeting, and then a meeting to have a meeting, and that's just the culture of it, is there something that they can think about, or is there a particular part of your book that you would like for them to pay attention to?
Yes, please, everyone, if you get the book, and I hope you do, remember, it's yours for free. And remember, STWM. That's all you have to do. Log in to stwm.com, and you get the book for free.
Okay.
And remember Chapter 4.
Okay.
Quiet time. It all starts with that.
Chapter 4.
Yes.
The idea, again, though, of you have to have a meeting to have a meeting. How can they begin to talk to, when they finish listening to our conversation and they're getting ready to go into yet another meeting, what's a thought they can carry with them into that meeting?
Please, everyone, remember what I said about time. If you don't control your time, you don't control your life.
Okay.
Do you really want to be out of control in your whole life?
Right.
And remember how precious time is. It's all we have. We can't squander a second of it. It's too precious.
You know, I think that's perhaps the greatest gift and hopefully takeaway from your book, that time really is, it is all that we have, and we really must pay attention to it and treat it with respect. And too many times we just don't.
Exactly.
Have you, as you've talked to people about your book and just about the work that you do in general, do you recall any particular changes that really struck you as being memorable as people were able to go through this process?
Do you remember I told you we did a video called STWM, Structured Time and Workflow Management. At the end of the day, usually when I conduct a lecture, and I don't care how good I think I am, by 3 o'clock, so sometime after lunch, people start packing up and thinking of getting home, getting on the highways or the freeways or on the trains. At 5 o'clock, the bosses and their employees wouldn't leave. I couldn't get them out of it. They were too busy negotiating a mutual time lock agreement.
How wonderful.
Here's how it worked. There's quid pro quo. It's this. If you give me a time lock, an hour, a half a day of uninterrupted time, in return, I'll increase productivity. I'll improve the quality of my work. I'll do something that will benefit us.
Okay.
Not just me. In other words, when you have control of your time and you have control of your work and your work hours, you'll meet your deadlines.
Okay.
And you'll increase the quality of your work. Everyone will win.
And everyone,
especially your family.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And especially you in your family. And, of course, it's role modeling, too, isn't it? Because we are growing an entire generation of young people who are on 24/7 and who don't get the value of taking time in a seasoned, reasoned way, if you will, because it's got to be 25 things that they're doing at one time. By paying attention to time management in the way that you describe, we model for them, I would suggest, a higher quality of life.
Pamela, you're so right. That's so true. And that's what happened. When they dispersed with their time lock agreements, they became the role models for the entire enterprise. And suddenly everyone was entering into mutual time lock agreements. It changed the entire attitude of the company.
Wonderful.
About time.
Wonderful. We are just about out of time. Edward G. Brown, author of The Time Bandit Solution. Is there anything that you would like to say to the listeners or that you would like to remind them of?
Only that I think you have a wonderful show.
Thank you.
And I'm saying this because I listened to two other programs that you ran, and you are such a great moderator. And finally, everyone, think about what you can do with learning more about life. Read more books. Join, as I said, a book club, and be good to yourselves. Take that vacation you promised yourself. And that's all I can think of for now, Pamela.
But that is wonderful. Thank you, folks.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. And remember, you can listen to Mind Talk on demand at myndtalk.org. The managing producer is Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications for Mind Talk with Dr. Pamela Brewer. Our social media coordinator, Courtney Ebu, thank you very much. Mind Talk is provided daily as an educational public service and is not intended to replace treatment with a licensed medical or mental health professional. If you would like to be in touch with me directly, that number is 301-654-5286. That is 301-654-5286. And again, for more information about Mind Talk, just go to mindtalk.org. You'll find lots of information there and lots of programs that you can listen to. And of course, you must always, always remember, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. Take care.